One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
What is going on out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on... Yeah, we're here at Expanded Perspectives. That's right. Yeah, I'm not going to pump it all up. We're here. We're here, and we're hanging out with y'all. And when I say we're, I'm talking about this fella sitting next to me. He's a man of many names. He's the thick neck, the big fizzy, the Kylomite. We've had a bunch. We're going to have to say, you're not really obsessed with anything else. But anyway, the unobsessed with anything right now fella beside me is Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here. I appreciate all the warm wishes again for my birthday and things. People are tagging me and things. But I will make one correction. I'm not trying to be, you know, that kind of guy. But if you're going to hashtag Big Fizzy, make sure it's P-H-I-Z-Z-Y instead of F-I-Z-Z-Y. P-H for Filson, right? Big Fizzy. I think there's a rapper named Big Fizzy with the F. I don't want to be confused with him because I saw a couple hashtags and there were some scantily dressed women on poles and stuff. And I'm like, I don't know what this is, but this is not what Big Fizzy's about. I'm about
I'm
pellet grills. I'm about LaCroix.
You're not about
Perrier.
Strippers?
I was at a time in my life. Not so much right
I was
going to
say, I know you were at a time in your life because
it could be.
I saw that.
Well, it depends on what mood. Like if you catch Big Fizzy like five or six maker marks in, yeah, I'm down. I'm like, let's go. Where's Rick's? But like normal, I'm like, nah, Big Fizzy ain't about that. It just all depends on how inebriated I am. That's how I judge lots of things.
I talked to the Fox the other day about you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he had hollered at me, and we were telling stories, and he got to laughing about the time you fell down.
Uh-huh. I remember that.
And then we were like, what happened? You said, I hit my face. And we were like, on what? And you said, the ground.
Yeah. It happens from time to time.
It was cold that night, too. We thought we lost you.
Man, I miss those nights with the big bonfires and stuff.
That was, yeah, we were all sitting there, and we drank way too much that night.
Wouldn't be the first or last time.
No, that's true. Yeah,
dude, the other day, I came home. Where was I at? I don't remember. Oh, we were at baseball practice. I came home late. It was dark out or whatever. And my wife and my two sons that were there, because Jacob was with me at baseball, they were like, you would not believe the size of the spider that just ran in the house a while ago.
In the house.
Yeah. And I was like, what do you mean? I go,
what do you mean in the house?
Why didn't you kill it? She's like, well, Luke was supposed to, but he missed it. I'm like, well, Luke is seven. Why didn't you kill it? She's like, I wouldn't get near it. I mean, the abdomen.
So the 7 year old's fighting it, but the mom's like, not today.
She goes, you better get your earplugs and put a mouthpiece in or something, or a mouth guard or night guard. I'm like, for what? He goes, in case it crawls in your ear. And I'm like, what are you talking? She's like, you should have seen the abdomen on this thing, Kyle. I mean, this thing is huge. I'm like,
that makes you feel great.
Where is it? She goes, it's under the dishwasher. It went under there about an hour ago. I'm like, I wish you just never would have even told me, because now I'm going to be worried, right, all night long. Anytime you feel a thread brush on you, you're like,
You should just keep that kind of crap to yourself.
Keep it to yourself. I mean, if there's anything, please kill it. Please.
I like how she has issued that work to the 7-year-old.
Yeah, because she doesn't want it on her, right. Probably.
You go get it, Luke. I don't want it to get me. And Luke's like, I got it.
Well, he tried, but he failed miserably. I'm like, well, let's go spray some poison under there. She's like, no, don't spray no poison. I don't want the cats to get their paws on it. You know, because Hazel Cat, which was the studio cat, when we moved studios, you know, Hazel had to come with. So Hazel Cat's at our house now. And then we got a Gizmo, is the newly adopted cat.
Funny.
I'd hate to see one of them go, but if it's between them and that giant spider, I'd rather see the spider die.
That's right.
For sure. But yeah, so I mean.
So the spider's still at large.
I was gone all day today, but yeah. As far as I know, it's under that dishwasher, or it's not.
It's not like you can hear it, right?
Goodness.
I'm like sneaking around.
Why would you tell me?
I wish I could have seen that. That'd have been hilarious. That'd have been hilarious. I got you something here that's not hilarious, Brad.
What's that?
We have a hunter's sighting near a gravel pit of a large, hairy hominid.
Ooh.
Yeah, you're going to like this. Now, this took place back in 1997.
Good year.
In the fall. This is in November, the second Tuesday in St. Louis County in Minnesota.
I think I was probably listening to Wu-Tang Forever when that came out. That might have not come out till 98.
Wu-Tang's for the kids.
Maybe I was still in the 36 chambers at that point.
That's right. This says between County Road 8 and the north side, between the power lines and a county gravel pit. Nearest town is Floodwood. This fella says that I was deer hunting about 5 miles from Floodwood on County Road 8, about a half a mile after the blacktop ends, past the power lines, before the gravel pit. I've hunted this state land for about 10 years with several friends and family. And over that time, and I've known everything about this area, but on this Tuesday afternoon, it was a very calm day. There was almost no wind at all. And you could hear every noise in the woods that day. There was not a deer in sight. I was going to wait till 5 or so and make my way out of the woods, and I had to walk through a couple of thick cedar swamps to get back to my truck. And at about 4:45, a branch snapped. And then another. Now, we've been there where you start hearing these noises where the woods are coming alive. It says, but these were not small branches breaking. And I could tell whatever it was coming my way. So I got my .308 ready to see what was coming towards me. And I've been putting some bait out, so I thought it might be a bear by how clumsily it was coming through the swamp. I then saw movement off my left side. I got my gun up, tried to get the animal in my scope to identify what it was. The color was dark brown like a moose, and as I tried to get a good look at it through my scope, it stopped about 30 yards away in silence. Well, then it's going to be a hard time looking at it through your scope at 30 yards.
Yeah, what kind of scope?
Yeah, I looked around my scope at it, and I could not identify what it was. It was like a gorilla on two legs with very thick, long hair, and it must have saw me look around my scope, because it was there for a couple of seconds, and it let out a super loud howl, a howl like I've never heard anything make before. At that point, it turned and went back the way it came very rapidly, covering ground through this thick swamp, breaking branches as it went. I would estimate it went about 100 yards in 10 seconds. Then it stopped and howled once again very loud, and it started moving again. I could tell it was going away from me to the south, or the southwest, rapidly, and my heart was pounding out of my chest. I climbed down out of my stand and ran to the truck about a mile away through the cedar swamp, and with my safety off and too scared to look back. I got to the truck, jumped in, and tried to explain to myself what I had just seen. Until that day, I was an avid hunter of everything and never thought there was a thing like that out there. And now seeing and hearing whatever that was, I've quit hunting. I've not been back in the woods much at all since, and never in there near dark.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I've heard so many people, same thing. They are avid hunters, outdoorsmen, and they have an experience with something, and they won't even confirm to themselves what they think it was, but they know that they're not going back out there. And when I run in or talk to those people, those are the ones that I'm like, well, why? They're not just making it up. Like, they chose not to hunt anymore.
Yeah, there's no shame in quitting doing a hobby. If you have a hobby and you've been playing golf and you just told me one day, I'm quitting playing golf and you sold all your golf clubs and I started laughing, I'd be like, what's the matter, Kyle? You see a Bigfoot out there in the golf club? Nobody cares if you quit a hobby. So if you quit hunting, you'd just be like, I just don't care to do it anymore. But to have that story
and to be like,
to prop you up is the reason, that's really strange, because it's like, why would you make it up? You don't have to lie to quit something. You're an adult.
It's not like I just stopped playing golf. It'd be one thing, but it, like you're saying, if you're like, I sold a bunch of stuff and I ain't ever playing, I'm not setting foot on a golf course again.
Ever.
You'd be like, well, what happened?
Yeah.
That would be the first question. What happened?
Nothing. I'm just never playing again. And there's no shame in that. You would just be like, I'm just done with the sport. But to have that story and it moves you like that, like we said, you could quit if you want to, but this has forced you to quit. So it means something happened.
I've walked away from badminton. I'll never play that again.
Really?
Yeah.
Ever since that time in 98?
I've never played again.
I got you. Yep. I don't blame you, though. I've
walked away from things. You know, badminton. I'm done with that. Any sports that you walked away from? Never to return?
Let's see. What have I walked away from?
Croquet, where you hit the balls on the grass through the hoops.
I've walked away from that.
I've never played that.
I've never played it. That and cricket. I've never played either one of those, and I will never play those.
I've played cricket. I had a...
No, you've swung a cricket bat.
No, we actually played a game. Yeah, I played... My position was silly mid-off, and I remember the guys were bowling and stuff. Oh, that's a real position.
I'm not doubting it's a real position, but a bunch of you jackasses down here in Texas rolling around balls and swinging at them just because you own a cricket bat don't make you playing cricket.
No, we had the bales, the stumps, everything. You could buy all that stuff in Dallas. They have a whole shop for it. We actually played. You know several of the guys. We went down to the football field by our house back over there by Couch.
Did it take you 4 days to play it?
No, we only played for like 2 hours.
Ridiculous sport.
It's not pitching, it's bowling.
Ridiculous
you like throw
sport.
It into the ground and try to stump somebody. Yeah, it's not that cool. I mean, it's compared to baseball, it's not that cool. But I did see a video a couple years ago where, I don't remember what, it was like a game, a test match or whatever they call them. And they had an American ex-baseball player on the team. He demoralized them. Because you can bat till you're out. So he hit like...
Can you hit home runs in it?
Oh, yeah. That's worth 6 runs if you hit it out.
Hitting all of them out?
A ton of them. If you hit on the ground and it rolls out, that's like 4. Because there's no walls like in baseball.
Yeah, so if you just hit it in the air, you fly it out.
That's 6 runs, yes.
So he just hit him out until he got tired of hitting
them. He hit like 300 runs before they finally got him out. Once you're out, you're out. Each team gets 10 outs. When those 10 outs happen, that your team's done, you never get to bat again. So one team bats till there's 10 outs, then they flip, and the other team bats till they get 10 outs. That's why it takes 4 days.
I'd rather just go play darts. 180. I'm not walking away from darts.
No.
That's never happening.
Away. Well, speaking of monsters walking around in the swamps and stuff.
Yeah.
This is pretty cool. This isn't in the swamps necessarily, but in the sewers. And from time to time, we talk about monsters being seen in the sewers. Well, our friend Linda Godfrey, she just came out with a new book called I Know What I Saw. And we need to get her back on here soon to talk about that because we haven't had her on in years. But I remember we've had her on more than once to talk about the Beast of Bray Road and things like that. And with Halloween approaching,
let's get her back on.
Yeah, we need to have her talk with her. Anyways, she, in addition to writing, you know, books, she also has a blog. And, of course, it's called Linda Godfrey's Blog. I'll put links to it in the show notes or you can Google it. But recently I was over there, and she had a pretty interesting story involving real werewolves running around the sewers in the town of Minot, North Dakota. Well, over on Linda's blog, she claims that she'd first gotten wind of this report that was sent to her in an email by a witness who she calls Pete. That's not his real name. He wishes to remain anonymous because he's in law enforcement. And he had apparently apprehended a burglary suspect who had quite an outlandish tale to tell. Now, Linda says on her blog, in her own words, that the guy, who was the burglar, went on to explain to Pete that he and his friend were fooling around by a large culvert down by the river. Now, this particular culvert is about 6 feet across and easy for a man to walk in. It is inside the city of Minot and leads right out to the bank of the river. Now, the suspect said that he and his friend had seen something in the shadows that was about 7 feet tall. He told my friend that they had also stepped on what they thought was a body while they were walking in the culvert. The guy stated that he and his friend had ran out of there. The suspect said that the werewolves, which were living in the sewer system, gave chase. Now, while this sounds crazy, of course, I've been noticing a few things since hearing the story. The city police department has had a couple of calls within the last couple of months concerning manhole covers being displaced or off of manholes around the city. Normally, I wouldn't think twice about those types of calls, but now it strikes me as odd. Personally, I've never been able to shake that mental image of two criminals stumbling over a dead body as they flee the culvert after spotting a 7-foot-tall something watching them from the shadows. And mind it, may not be the only place where people should take extra care around city water and drainage systems. In her book, Monsters Among Us, Linda says that she shared the story of a brother and sister who claimed to have seen something similar in a Los Angeles suburb. And Minot does boast a river and lies near several wildlife refuges, so the habitat is certainly there for wild animals to exist. So what do you think about that? This law officer apprehends these burglary suspects who come running out of this culvert.
And saying something chased them out of there.
Something 7 foot tall. And they said, the burglars said that they thought it was a werewolf. And they've been noticing the police department around the town has been getting several calls of manhole covers being displaced or off completely for weeks. I mean, that, whenever you hear these stories of stuff living in the sewers, I don't know why I find that extra creepy, but I just do.
Well, it's one of those, like, I didn't know that there was an underground, group that lived in the tunnels under Las Vegas.
I saw a documentary one time, and I don't remember if it was Vegas or maybe it was New York, but there's like a whole village, man.
Yes, there's like 300 or 400 people that live in this one area down in these tunnels under Vegas in the storm tunnels.
I think the same goes for Paris, too.
And it was one of those, like, I had no idea that that was down there. So any of these other places that may have those kind of things, what could be living down there?
I don't know. And Nick Redfern writes at length about these devolved humans.
Yes, yes.
Who have been living underground for years and years and years, centuries. I always picture, like, the salamanders and other creatures that live underground, like they have no eyes, you know, and they look like Gollum, but without eyes. Yes. I don't know why those stories always sound very creepy. Well, let's take a break, folks. Get your conspiracy hats on, because when we get back, we're going to be talking about a conspiracy theory that I think is going to blow your mind. Stick with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I hope everyone out there is doing well. I know that I am. Well, for sure, better than I deserve. If I sound a little bit nasally, I apologize. Man, there's just a lot of pollen in the air, and I've been sneezing something fierce today. I took my Zyzol, and it's helped a little bit, but not as well as I wished it would. But enough about me. Let's get into this. It's conspiracy time. Now, sometimes on the show, we like to bring up conspiracies. Now, we don't do this all the time because we're not a conspiracy-based show. But sometimes it's interesting to take a look at something, especially when something new happens in the news, whether it's a new rover or something lands on the moon or something that always brings up the moon landing conspiracy, or if some bizarre assassination happens. You know, the JFK conspiracies will be brought up again, and there'll always be something floating around in the news. And recently, there's been a strange death, and this is what's piqued my interest this week for conspiracies. Now, this is a sensitive subject because it involves politics. It involves sex trafficking, murder, and a former president of the United States. I'm talking about the recent death of that scumbag, Jeffrey Epstein. Or is it Epstein? I'm not sure. Everybody says Epstein, but it's not Albert Einstein. It's Albert Einstein. So why wouldn't it be Epstein? I'm not sure. Anyways, I'm talking about the recent death of Jeffrey Epstein and how the Clintons and some others might actually be behind his death. Now, first off, I'm not against the Clintons, so this is not a political rant. I personally liked Bill Clinton when he was my president, even though I didn't know at the time, because I was only in high school, all the corruption and stuff he was doing in the state of Arkansas, you know, with the illegal drug trafficking and all that stuff. But the country seemed to do pretty well when he was the president. Anyways, this is more about the powers that be, the puppet masters, you know, at the top, and how they secretly control everything, especially when they might get into trouble. Love them or hate them, a lot of people who worked for the Clintons died in some very interesting ways. But first, let's start with Mr. Epstein. On July 8th of 2019, federal prosecutors charged financier Jeffrey Epstein with one count of sex trafficking of a minor and one count of conspiracy to commit sex trafficking. Now, according to the indictment, over the course of many years, Jeffrey Epstein, the defendant, sexually exploited and abused dozens of minor girls at his homes in Manhattan and Palm Beach, Florida, also in other locations. In order to maintain and increase his supply of victims, it's reported that Epstein also paid some of certain victims of his to recruit additional girls to be similarly abused. Now, the prosecution alleged that he sexually assaulted girls as young as 14 years old. And following the indictment, Epstein pleaded not guilty on both of those charges. And on August 10th, several media outlets confirmed that Epstein had died, apparently by suicide in his jail cell. Now, his death is currently still under investigation. And even as recently as August 16th, the New York City Medical Examiner ruled that his death was a suicide by hanging. Now, there's a few things you got to understand that this in itself is odd. I mean, this is a criminal who has been locked away. He's a high profile criminal. He's very important to this sex ring. I mean, everybody wants to get to the bottom of not only who was exploited, but who participated in this ring. And that's where it starts to get scary, because it looks like a lot of important people or potentially high ranking people were involved in this sex ring. And I remember years ago when this whole Pizzagate came up, you know, when Hillary was running for president, and, you know, people were like, oh, that's crazy theory. You know, these sex rings with young kids and things like that, and, you know, with pedophiles and stuff. But, you know, now this comes out in July of this year. I mean, it makes you wonder. It's kind of like the movie with Mel Gibson, the conspiracy theory. Remember, everybody thinks he's crazy. Turns out some of the stuff he was saying was truthful. And that's what's difficult about conspiracy theories. I don't care if you're talking about the moon landing, JFK, Gulf of Tonkin, all these things the Gulf of Tonkin was proven true. But, you know, some of this stuff is probably not conspiracy theory. Some of this stuff is probably real. But then other parts of it are total exaggerations of what happened. And that's the difficult part with conspiracy theories. I mean, I personally believe that we've been to the moon, but I definitely also know that some of the photographs that NASA has shown us, they've been doctored. Now, why they did that, I don't know. Let's move on, though. We're not going to get into that. Here's a few things that I want you to know about being in jail. First and foremost, you have virtually no control over your life or any of your surroundings. You can't so much as get an aspirin without authorization. And in most jails, you can't wear a belt, you're not allowed to have shoelaces, and you're definitely not allowed to keep a razor in your cell. You have no privacy, no sense of dignity. Basically, you have no rights. That's why you're in jail. And in a well-run jail, high-profile prisoners like Jeffrey Epstein have virtually no chance of killing themselves. They're under surveillance. They're under watch. Lots of times they're in solitary confinement, although Jeffrey was not. He did have a cellmate, which is also bizarre, because, well, how do you kill yourself when the cellmate in there? And how does the cellmate not know what happened? How do the guards not know? That's why the alleged suicide of Jeffrey Epstein, a man with a very powerful, American and foreign friends, who was just about to stand trial for allegedly sexually abusing dozens of girls, many of them underage, that's why it's unbelievable. Epstein was placed, they say, on suicide watch on July 23rd of this year, and after being found semi-conscious in his cell with marks on his neck and what prison officials described at the time was a failed suicide attempt. And they say that later he was removed from suicide watch 6 days later. And on July 29th, he was returned to a segregated area of the prison where they had extra security. It was known as the Special Housing Unit. So, first things first, why was Epstein removed from suicide watch if they found him 6 days prior with marks around his neck like he was attempting to kill himself? And, you know, why was he moved into a different area, the Special Housing Unit? Now, officials said that under the prison's rules and procedures, that Epstein was supposed to be given a cellmate and monitored by prison guards every 30 minutes, 24 hours a day, without fail. Now, apparently, under the prison's rules, they also want somebody who's possibly going to commit suicide to have a cellmate because they believe that having a cellmate in your room with you at all times will help deter, you know, you committing suicide. They said neither officials nor Epstein's legal team wish to comment on whether those procedures, any of those, were followed. But at least one official familiar with the episode said that they were not. Now, so Mr. Epstein was left alone in his cell for a long period of time. Number one, that's not supposed to happen. There's supposed to be guards checking on them. Remember, every 30 minutes, 24 hours a day. This didn't happen. They said that prison guards did not check on him like they were supposed to, and he was left alone for hours, and there was two security cameras that also face each of these cells. You know, this is the modern day. This isn't like the Green Mile, where you had to send a cop or a warden up and down, you know, checking on the cells, doing bed call. I mean, they have cameras. This is 2019. But strangely, oddly, two of the cameras that were facing that cell during that particular time were not working. Strange, right? What's not strange is that Mr. Epstein was about to blow the lid off of this elite sex ring with many high-profile members. And it's believed, among many conspiracy theorists as well as others, that the Clintons were part of this group. Now, we all know that Bill likes his ladies, especially young girls. We all know that Bill doesn't seem to have a problem stepping out of his marriage when he wants to. And is it possible that he and several other members of this exclusive club didn't want Jeffrey talking about him and had him killed? I don't know, maybe. Let's take a look at some other people that have crossed paths with the Clintons and died under very unusual circumstances. What is known as the Clinton body count originated with the 1987 double homicide of two young boys, Don Henry and Kevin Ives, along with the violent deaths of several witnesses or suspects in the investigation. This all happened while Bill Clinton was the governor of Arkansas. Now, at this time, apparently drugs were being flown in by the famous drug runner Barry Seal and others, because he had hired several other pilots, and they were dropping, you know, tons of cocaine from these private airplanes while they were still flying. They weren't landing and dropping them off. They were literally throwing them out of the airplanes because, you know, everybody was tracking the planes. But if they didn't appear that they landed, there was nothing suspected. And this went on for years. Now, these packages would then be collected by other drug runners on the ground. Now, this went on for years. And rumor has it that the Clintons were well aware of this activity. They allowed it to continue, of course, as long as they got a cut from the profits, which there apparently is a big paper trail that shows that they did. Millions of dollars. And this all took place in little old Mena, Arkansas. Well, one late afternoon, two boys, the ones I mentioned earlier, Don and Kevin, one was 16, the other one was 17, were just outside of Mena, Arkansas, doing what any teenage typical boys would do, messing around. They loved to work on their cars. It is said that they liked to hunt, they liked to fish, and of course, they liked to play ball. They'd even go out on double dates, I mean, with friends, girlfriends. These guys were, they were buddies. Now, on this particular night, they decided to go spotlighting at around 11:30 to midnight, somewhere in the night. That's what their parents claimed. Now, if you're not familiar with spotlighting is an illegal type of hunting where it's done at night and you shine a spotlight and you can look for deer. That's what you're trying to do. And the deer don't know what the spotlight is. You would think they would run off, but they don't because it's not their instinct. They freeze and you can shoot them. It's illegal. You're not supposed to be doing it. But they were doing it. They were boys. But on this night, they didn't even have any guns with them. They didn't have any weapons at all. They were just spotlighting just for fun, just to see, you know, if they could spot any deer, if they could spot any turkey up in the trees, you know, raccoons, possums, whatever. They're just, you know, so they were bored, having fun in the woods. Who doesn't want to do that? That's fun. Anyways, they were doing this, but apparently they didn't find any deer. What they found were these drug runners on the ground collecting these packages from the sky. And it cost them their lives. In the pre-dawn hours of August 23rd, 1987, a 6,000-ton cargo train was traveling along at a speed of 52 miles an hour when the engineer, a guy named Stephen Schroyer, saw something in his path, but he couldn't tell what it was. As the train drew closer, Schroyer made the horrifying discovery that two boys were lying motionless across the railroad tracks. It was ruled later that the boys had smoked the equivalent of 20 marijuana cigarettes, you know, those left-handed ones, and laid down on the tracks. But the parents didn't buy it. And an investigation revealed later that one of the boys had been stabbed prior to the train running over him, and the other boy had had part of his skull smashed in. So, you know, somebody had placed the bodies on the train tracks, knowing that the train would come. Of course, the train, you know, the engineer, when he saw the boys on the tracks, he couldn't stop the 6,000-ton train. So, yeah, he ran over their bodies. And that's whoever laid them there wanted that to happen. But this is where it starts to get weird because the parents, you know, they didn't buy the story that the boys, they weren't known. They didn't have any previous records for doing drugs. Yeah, I'm sure teenagers would experiment. Sure. But the claim is just strange that the coroner, the medical examiner claims that they had the equivalent of 20 marijuana cigarettes and then decided to lay down on the train tracks. That seems strange. So the parents, they hired a private investigator and things like that. And like I said, it later turned out that the boy was stabbed previous to that. The other one had his skull bashed in, but it didn't go anywhere. Like the police didn't want to investigate it. None of the investigators wanted to touch it. Something was going on. It's because somebody was telling them not to, right? Somebody, the puppet master. And who's the puppet master in the state of Arkansas at the time? That's right, Bill Clinton. The case went nowhere. It said that several law enforcement officials and several prosecutors all participated in a large-scale cover-up, some even receiving pay raises and promotions, all under the supervision of, you guessed it, Governor Bill Clinton. Now, once in the White House, things didn't stop. This is where it gets scarier. Many premature deaths related to accidents, most likely the result of sabotage and suicides, staged by hired thugs, coincide with investigations into illegal fundraising. And when Clinton left the White House, several witnesses and corruption probes have been suicided or have met bizarre accidents only days before giving sworn testimony, all related to the Clinton Foundation and other fundraising. So anybody that's about to speak out against Mr. Clinton, oddly enough, has an accident, something strange like that. And sure, one or two things might be a coincidence, but this list is long, folks, like 30 deep, if not more. So let's get into some of these. They're pretty strange. This first one is a guy named James McDougal. Now, the Clintons convicted Whitewater partner, Mr. McDougal, died of an apparent heart attack while in solitary confinement. Just so happens he was the key witness in Ken Starr's investigation. So here's a guy that was convicted in this Whitewater scandal that could incriminate Mr. Clinton. And right before he's about to give his statement as a key witness, he has a strange heart attack while in solitary confinement. Odd. If it's just a standalone, it wouldn't be that odd. But when you see the rest of this list, or hear the rest of this list, you'll start to think he's a victim, too. The next one is Mary Mahoney, who was a former White House intern. And she was murdered in July 1997 at a Starbucks coffee shop in Georgetown. Now, the murder happened just after she was about to go public with her story of sexual harassment in the White House. Odd, huh? How about Vince Foster? He was a former White House counselor and colleague of Hillary Clinton at Little Rock's Rose Law Firm. He died of a gunshot wound to the head, which they later ruled was a suicide. The odd thing was, the gunshot to his head was in the back of his head. Now, I don't know about you, but if you're going to commit suicide, why would you put your own gun to the back of your own head? Doesn't make much sense. How about Ron Brown, Secretary of Commerce and former DNC chairman, reported to have died by impact in a plane crash? But later, a pathologist close to the investigation reported that there was a hole in the top of Brown's skull resembling a gunshot wound. At the time of his death, Brown was being investigated and spoke publicly of his willingness to cut a deal with prosecutors. The rest of the people on the plane also died. A few days later, the air traffic controller, who was in contact with that plane, committed suicide. How about Victor Razor II? Now, Razor, a major player in the Clinton fundraising organization, also died in a private plane crash in July 1992. Paul Tully, a Democratic National Committee political director, found dead in a hotel room in Little Rock, Arkansas, in September of 1992. He was described by Clinton as a dear friend and trusted advisor. No one really knows what killed Mr. Tully. Ed Wiley, also a Clinton fundraiser, found dead November 1993, deep in the woods in Virginia, of a gunshot wound to the head. Again, ruled a suicide. Ed Wiley died on the same day that his wife, Kathleen Wiley, claimed Bill Clinton groped her in the Oval Office. That's right, in the White House. Ed Wiley was involved in several Clinton fundraising events. Jerry Parks, head of Clinton's gubernatorial secretary team in Little Rock, was gunned down in his car at a deserted intersection just outside of Little Rock. Now, Parks' son said that his father was building a dossier on Clinton. He allegedly threatened to reveal this information. After he died, the files were mysteriously removed from his house. I think of the scene in, what is it, Training Day? Remember when Denzel Washington goes to that intersection late at night? And the lady, he's looking at the lady lighting her cigarette, and then the next thing you know, this van slides in front of the car, the doors slide open, and all these Russians jump out with AKs and gun him down. That's what I'm picturing. So this Jerry Parks guy has been collecting and building a dossier on Mr. Clinton and all the things he's doing. And while he's outside of an intersection, a deserted intersection, he's gunned down with automatic rifles. Don't you think that's strange? And then all the files that he had been collecting mysteriously disappeared. Come on, man. This is not a conspiracy. This is fact. These people are dead. This really happened. Let's move on. James Bunch died from a gunshot wound. Again, they said it was suicide. It was reported that he had a black book of people which contained names of influential people who visited prostitutes in Texas and in Arkansas. James Wilson was found dead in May 1993 from an apparent hanging suicide. He was reported to have ties to the Whitewater scandal. Again, Kathy Ferguson, ex-wife of Arkansas trooper Danny Ferguson, was found dead in May of 1994 in her living room with a gunshot to her head. It was ruled a suicide, even though there were several packed suitcases as if she were going somewhere. Danny Ferguson was a co-defendant along with Bill Clinton in the Paula Jones lawsuit. Kathy Ferguson was a possible corroborating witness for Paula Jones. And later, her husband, Bill Shelton, the Arkansas State Trooper, who was the fiancé of Miss Kathy Ferguson, he too was found dead later that year of a gunshot wound, also ruled a suicide at the gravesite of his dead fiancé. They both ended up dead? I mean, come on. Gandy Ball, attorney for Clinton's friend Dan Lassiter, died by jumping out of a window of a tall building on January 1994. His client was a convicted drug distributor. Florence Martin, accountant and subcontractor for the CIA. He was related to the Barry Seal and the Mena, Arkansas deal and, you know, the airport drug wriggling scheme. He died of 3 gunshot wounds to the head. Susan Coleman reportedly had an affair with Clinton when he was Arkansas Attorney General. Well, she died of a gunshot wound to the back of the head. This was also ruled a suicide, and even darker, she was pregnant at the time of her death. Paula Grober, Clinton's speech interpreter for the deaf from 1978 until her death in 1992. She died in a one-car car accident. Danny Casolaro, investigative reporter investigating the MENA airport scandal, and Arkansas Development Finance Authority. He slit his wrist, apparently, in the middle of doing his investigation. Paul Wilcher, attorney investigating corruption at MENA Airport with Casolaro and the 1980 October surprise, was found dead on a toilet on June 22, 1993, in his Washington, D.C. apartment. He had delivered a report to Janet Reno 3 weeks before his death. John Parnell Walker, a Whitewater investigator for Resolution Trust Corp., jumped to his death from his Arlington, Virginia apartment balcony on August 15, 1993. He was investigating the Morgan Guarantee scandal. Barbara Weiss, Commerce Department staffer, worked closely with Ron Brown and John Huang. Cause of death was unknown. She died November 29, 1996. Her bruised, naked body was found locked in her office at the Department of Commerce. She was beaten to death, folks. Charles Messner, Assistant Secretary of Commerce, who gave John Huang special security clearance, died shortly thereafter, again, in another small airplane crash. Now, let me just point this out before we move on. Yeah, you might be unlucky enough to have a friend or a loved one die in a plane wreck, right? It does happen. Not near as often as cars, but it does happen. What's the chance of working alongside and knowing four people who have died in plane crashes? How many times you may have worked with a coworker or been friends with someone who took their own life? It's a terrible thing. What's the chances of like nine people you worked with all blowing their brains out? I mean, that's not a coincidence. If you work for Clinton, you're going to find something out, and then, yeah, you're going to be taken care of. Barry Seal, you know, who the movie with Tom Cruise, I don't even remember the name of it, American Heist or something, I don't know, where he portrayed Barry Seal doing the drug running. Of course, he was gunned down right in front of his hotel room, right before he was about to go to trial. John Lawhorn Jr., a mechanic, found a check made out to Bill Clinton in the trunk of a car that was left at his repair shop. He was found dead after his car had hit a utility pole. Stanley Huggins investigated Madison Guarantee. His death was a purported suicide, but his report was never released to the public. Herschel Friday, attorney and Clinton fundraiser, died on March 1st, 1994, when his plane exploded. So there's another one. Another person died in a plane that you knew or worked with. It's incredible. The list goes on and on. I mean, there's a long list. There's even a long list of bodyguards that were also found dead. I'll put links to some of this stuff in the show notes. It's quite compelling, like I talked about. I'm not one for conspiracy theories, but it just seems like there's an awful lot of people that worked with Mr. Clinton. Now, I know you're going to say he's the president and the governor, and of course, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that work with him. But there's a lot that have died under very unusual circumstances. In airplanes, I mean, I knew a guy that committed suicide. My grandfather took his own life. But I don't know like 12 people that I've worked with that all were shot in the back of the head. What about the woman that was about to testify? She was found dead, but her bags were packed like she was getting ready to go somewhere. And then, you know, a month or two later, her husband was found dead, or he shot himself at her gravesite. It looks to me like Mr. Clinton had a hit squad and he just wanted all the loose ends tied. You know what I mean? He would just go around, and even if you possibly knew something, you were taken out. I mean, like even the poor mechanic who just found a check in the back of a trunk of a car that was made out to Mr. Clinton, he was found dead. There's something, where there's smoke, there's fire, folks. I might get even get in trouble about broadcasting this, so I better be on the lookout. But I hope you enjoyed that. If you're into it more, I'll put links to it in the show notes. You can read more about it. Let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
What One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I don't know, man. There's just, I'm not a big conspiracy guy, but some of these things you have to admit, it's an awful lot of odd coincidences.
I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not even going to discuss this. I'm not going to be one of those casualties. I don't know what you're talking about, sir.
Wrong number. Was that like a Pulp Fiction?
Yeah, wrong number. Yes, that's it. That's all. I'm not talking about it.
I'm with you, man. But that stuff is creepy.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, like back with the old Mel Gibson movie, Conspiracy Theory, right?
Yeah.
How everybody thought he was crazy, but he wasn't. So how many of these whistleblowers come out in the news and stuff, and they're like, oh, the World Bank is controlling everything, and these people are part of a secret society. And which ones worship the owl? Is that the Bilderbergs? But you know what I'm talking about.
I don't know. There's too many. I can't keep up with all of it.
The Illuminati and all that. But
owl neck.
Maybe there's more to it. Maybe these people aren't crazy, and something like that really is going on. I don't know. But speaking of going on, what do you got going on your next week?
Man, I don't know. I'm not sure what all we've got planned.
You got any big trips planned for the fall?
I may have a couple. I've got to look into those to see where we might be going. But yeah, I may have a couple. Nothing big until like say January, since we reevaluated what we were going to go do.
Yeah.
And we kind of held off. But this fall, yeah, there's probably going to be some that we need to go take care of and go check some stuff out. Yeah, I think so.
I think we're probably laying low for the rest of 2019, which I can't believe it's only like, 4 months left?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Yeah, that is pretty wild.
It goes by faster and faster every year. I was always told that as a kid. I never believed it. It is absolutely
well, especially now true. Because now you're talking about we're not too far out with us with deer season starts. Then it's going to be Halloween, and then we're going to get into you got Thanksgiving, you got Christmas. We've got a lot of birthdays coming up. That's going to be in that little window of time also. So yeah, we have the next few months is going to be very, very busy.
I thought you were going to say we're not too far away from the end.
Oh yeah, you and I aren't. I'm sure. Yeah.
Right. Well, if you have any stories of your own you'd like to share with me and Cam, please email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 945-3828. And you can follow us on all forms of social media. Till next time, folks, stay out of trouble. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.